Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and it's the first Monday of the month, so Dr. Marty Greer is here for our veterinary voice, and 2024, we've discussed, is the year of the neonate, and so this is our third edition of this particular topic, and so we thought, third edition, first 3 days, that seems to make sense. So we're going to talk about those first really critical 72 hours after your puppies are born, whether they're born naturally or born via C-section. There are certain things that we can encounter in those first 72 hours that how we handle them literally is life and death for these puppies. Right, Marty?
Absolutely. They're very fragile in those first few days.
So some of the things that we can see, and we're going to touch on each one of these as we go along, something that we like to call this big round group of things that people refer to as fading puppy, which is a bunch of different things. One of the things that that can be is canine herpes virus. So we can talk about that. And then liver shunt, which is something that we see sort of intermittently in our puppies. Pure Dog Talk is proudly sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet. This year, give your buyers the gift of peace of mind with a special go-home day offer from Trupanion. This offer provides puppies with immediate coverage, so they're protected should they get into mischief in their new homes. Trupanion covers pets against unexpected accidents and illnesses with no payout limits, helping ease the financial burden when a pet gets sick or injured. Even better, Trupanion is able to pay the veterinarian directly at the time of checkout, which means less out-of-pocket for your buyers. You can get this special offer for your buyers as part of the Breeder Support Program. It's completely free to join and available for breeders in the US, Canada, and Australia. Getting started is quick and easy. Just follow the link on my partner page at puredogtalk.com to get started. I'm coming today to talk to you about Brilliant Pad, and it is amazing and an incredible way for me to do my potty training with the puppies and not ever have to touch any yucky stuff. Brilliant Pad literally rolls the mess up and you never touch it. So I really wanted to talk to you guys about that, share with you the experience I had with it. It's like the most amazing thing you've ever seen. Welcome, Marty. Let's hit it, man.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover.
Yes, this is a deep subject. Okay, so talk to us about fading puppy, because that isn't really, as you said earlier to me, a diagnosis.
No, it's a garbage can diagnosis. It's basically we're just lumping a bunch of stuff together and calling it fading puppy because we don't necessarily have a confirmed diagnosis. We may not have a diagnosis yet. We may never have a diagnosis, but it is not a diagnosis. It's just a description of a puppy that fails to thrive. And I think that's a better term, is failure to thrive rather than fading puppy, because it's more clear that it's not really a term of diagnostics. So there's a lot of things we can do diagnostically with these guys to figure it out. And I think a lot of owners and veterinarians tend to kind of throw up their arms and say, well, it's a sick puppy. I don't really know what to do with it. Well, there's a lot of things you can do diagnostically. You can do almost everything to a small puppy that you can do to a big dog. So if you decide that you're going to pursue it, now, of course, the bigger the puppy gets, the easier it is to do the diagnostics. But if you choose to pursue some of these diagnostics, it's not that difficult. You can do an x-ray, you can do an ultrasound, you can do blood work. At the very least, do a glucose level. And we can do these now when our hospitals get results back almost immediately with tiny little blood samples. So you don't need a lot of blood. You don't need a lot of skills. You don't need a lot of equipment that you don't already have at a veterinary clinic if you have a veterinarian that's willing to work with you. And worst case scenario, you lose a puppy. Don't just put it in the freezer and walk away. Take it to your veterinarian. Ask them to either open it up for you or send it in for diagnostics. Our Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostic Lab does a complete postmortem for a very reasonable price. And it includes, I was just going through this with a client yesterday, 12 different infectious disease PCR tests. And those tests at Wisconsin, not every lab does this the same way. So that's why I like Wisconsin so well, as they say, and I think they're right, that they're probably the best at determining infectious diseases. And we can have those results back 24 to 48 hours after that puppy gets to the diagnostic lab. And you may say, well, I don't live in Wisconsin. How is that going to help me? And the answer is FedEx and UPS deliver overnight, and you don't have to be in Wisconsin to use their lab. You just need to have a box, like you would ship semen in, a styrofoam box and a chilled pack, not a frozen pack, a Ziploc bag to put the puppy in, some absorbent material, and the form to submit it. So your vet can have an account there. They can submit the puppy. You can run it to the post office, UPS or FedEx, whatever your preferred shipping is, and get that puppy shipped out. And in 48 hours, have a lot of information that you didn't have at the beginning. And if you only lose one puppy, you may say, well, I didn't really need to spend the money on that. But when the first puppy fades and dies, you don't know if it's the first or the first of many. So that's the thing, is your vet may open it up or the diagnostic lab may open it up. And we've found things that are clearly one-offs. We've seen, like, the puppy doesn't have an intestinal tract, a large intestine. Okay, that's not going to affect every puppy in the litter. But if you have herpes, if you have adenovirus, if you have distemper, if you have E. coli, if you have all these different kinds of diseases, the faster you can get a specific diagnosis and get a specific treatment put together, the better. Now, we're going to go through today a list of things that you can do, sort of shotgunning this and randomly, to treat any puppy that's not thriving. But if you can get specifically an answer, you're going to have the information to save the rest of your litter faster rather than if you wait till the second or third puppy die.
Right. And maybe save that second and third puppy, which is, you know, the goal.
Especially if you only have three. Right. You know, if you have a small breed and you only have three puppies, then you really want to have that information, because you can't afford to stand there and just watch your whole litter die. It's heartbreaking.
It is actually mentally destructive. So, okay. So what are we going to see? Talk to us about signs, symptoms, and how we can handle it.
So you may see a variety of different symptoms. You may see a puppy that's crying inconsolably, that no matter what you do with it, it doesn't stop crying. You may see a puppy that's so quiet and weak that it doesn't swarm and move with the rest of the puppies. And I'm a firm believer in, I don't think most of the time a bitch pushes a puppy away. I think if a puppy is off by themselves, it's because the swarm of puppies that are healthy moving around the whelping box, that puppy didn't move with the swarm, and so then it looks like it's been pushed off to the side. Are there times bitches push them off? Yeah, I've seen it, but most of the time, it's they don't keep up with the swarm because they're not warm, they're not fed, they're not healthy. There's something wrong with them. So they may be super quiet, they may be super noisy, they may have a low body temperature, they may be dehydrated. Remember, hydration is assessed based on color, not on pulling the skin up over the shoulders to see if it tense or not, because puppies don't have the sub-fat that allows that assessment to take place. So you need a white tissue or a white cotton ball, very high tech, rub the puppy, look at the color of the urine. And if it's pale yellow, the puppy's hydrated. And if it's dark yellow, the puppy's dehydrated. This is a fairly simple test.
Now what happens when you stimulate the puppy to pee and it pees blood? This just and blew my mind up. So talk to us about that.
And mostly this has been reported in cattle. So that's kind of where this information comes from, is that's usually a sign of dehydration, that they're just not getting enough fluid intake. And they may not be to the point that they're nutritionally deprived, but they are dehydrated because they didn't get enough milk. Maybe they were born with marginal placenta. They just didn't get off to a good start. So fluids, either lactated ringers, if you have that, normal saline, if you have that, or plasma, my preferred fluid of choice, can be very helpful in taking care of these puppies. And blood is always startling when it comes out of an orifice that it's not supposed to.
Yeah. But your advice is that that is not hysterical panic mode, get some sub-Q fluids in them.
Oh, that's pretty much get sub-Q fluids in them. They're dehydrated, and a dehydrated puppy is not going to do well. So the faster you can get fluids into them, the better. And if you don't have access to anything sub-Q, if you don't have normal saline, you don't have lactated ringers, you don't have plasma, at least give them some oral electrolytes. My preferred one is going to be a dog electrolyte solution. There are many of them on the market. The one I really like is the one that Revival makes, because it tastes like chicken. It's a chicken soup base. So the bitch likes it, the puppies like it, it tastes good, it goes down well, and you can give that to a young puppy with a bottle, with a feeding tube, any way that you need to get it into the puppy is fine. If you don't have that, at least give them Pedialyte. I mean, Pedialyte is not a perfect electrolyte solution for a dog, but it's better than nothing. So it's not that difficult to run to the 24-hour Walgreens right. and pick up a bottle of preferably unflavored Pedialyte. But if you can only get Apple, hey, buy Apple. If you can only get Gatorade, get Gatorade. But try to get something into the puppy that's electrolyte-driven and appropriate.
Right. And this goes back to what you and I have talked to in previous episodes. We have lists of what you should have. I always have a bag of lactated ringers available for every litter. And mm-hmm. that's just, it's there. It's sealed in its bag. It's good to go. So walk us through, for those of us in listener land who don't know, giving sub-Q fluids. How do we do it? How much do we give?
Well, I typically give about 10 cc's per pound of puppy. You can give a little bit more if you need to. And if the puppy's really dehydrated, that fluid is going to dissipate really quickly. Sometimes it droops down and it kind of ends up in their armpits. So don't let that startle you. Just put a warm compress on the puppy to help improve the circulation of the area to get it picked up a little faster. You can repeat it if you need to, every 2 to 4 hours if necessary. You want a syringe, you want a sterile needle. If you have access to a butterfly, that's probably the easiest way to administer it. That's a needle with two little wings on the side. Most vet clinics have them. You can order them and have them available to you so that they're more convenient. And that way you can hold on to that instead of the puppy, because the puppy's going to squirm a little bit unless it's really sick. So if you have that butterfly needle, it's a lot easier to administer. If you fill up one spot, you need to move to another so that you can do it. And always run your needle parallel to the puppy's backbone, not down into the back, because you don't want to give the fluids into the body cavity. You just want to give it under the skin. There are some veterinarians who talk about giving fluids intraperitoneally, but that's largely fallen out of favor. That means into the belly. That isn't usually recommended because there are some risks with perforating bowel and diaphragmatic hernias and a number of other things that can go wrong. So
it gives me a nauseous headache just thinking about it.
Yeah, I don't recommend that one. But it needs to be lactated ringers or saline. You can't give Pedialyte under the skin. You can't give electrolytes that are meant for oral use under the skin. Warm them first, because you don't want to chill the puppy. Make sure that they're warm, but make sure they're not too hot, because again, you can cause damage to the puppy if you put in fluids that are too warm. So check it with your wrist if you're not sure. And remember, if you microwave fluids, they tend to heat up in sort of irregularly inside the bag or syringe or whatever. So make sure that you've agitated that syringe before you administer it, because you don't want to give a spot of, you thought the fluids were warm in one place, but they were actually hot in another. So just be aware, microwaves do not uniformly heat fluids. Using a bowl of warm water might be a better choice. And when we thought plasma, we never, ever, ever put plasma in the microwave because of the heat and the damage that it does to the antibodies that are in there. So those are some kind of tips along the way. We do have a video on Revival Animal Health's website in the Learning Center on how to administer fluids. Yeah, link will be coming. I think we did it with a cat, an adult cat, but the principles are the same. So just follow along.
As I was taught sub-Q fluids a million years ago by my veterinary friend, it's like giving a vaccine. If you've ever vaccinated your dog, it's the same basic concept. Sub-Q, right. Lift the skin, poke the needle. The shocking thing, if you're unaccustomed to it in my world, is it makes this big round bolus of fluid. It looks weird. And so when you first see that, that can be startling.
Right. They do look humpbacked when you do it, but that'll dissipate really quickly.
Particularly if they're very dehydrated.
Right. And if you're doing this by yourself, and many times you are, you can put the puppy, like take a towel and roll it up and make a U-shaped, like a donut for the puppy, so that it pushes against the towel instead of running across the tabletop or floor or whelping surface or wherever you're trying to work. Now, those little headrests that they have for babies that you can put into their car seat so that they don't drop their head over when they're sleeping, those are great if you have one. So if you have kids or you had kids and you've got that laying around the house, I put that in with the whelping supplies. Just keep it there, because once you've used it for the dog, you're probably not going to give it back to the kid. I mean, you could wash it, but you know. If your kids are grown, you don't need it anymore. So save that for your puppies. But if you don't have that, a towel rolled up nice and tight in a donut shape is a really handy way to do it. Putting a puppy down into a basket or a box is a little bit too likely to cause the needle to go in the wrong direction. So I want them on a flatter surface. And again, be really careful. I know this seems like common sense, but I've had people have puppies fall off of tables or countertops or whatever because they reached around to grab something when the puppy was up on a surface. And you'd be surprised how fast those little critters can launch themselves. So please do not let your puppy cause trauma to themselves by launching off of your kitchen counter or your bed or your bathroom counter, wherever you happen to be working. Do it on a surface that the puppy is safe.
And ask me how I know. Do not leave them where the bitch might take the box off the bed and fling it on the floor.
Oh, I won't ask.
Yeah, don't ask.
Yeah, but those things happen in an instant. You know, bitches that wake up from C-section, if they're not completely awake, unaware of where these little aliens have come from that are now trying to nurse on them. I've had puppies grabbed by their bitches and instantly killed. I had one grabbed out of the hand of a technician. Of course, the only bitch puppy in the litter was grabbed out of the technician's hand, and he was very astute technician. It wasn't like he was careless. He just didn't see it coming. And if you hear that little squeaky sound and you're a bitch that's waking up from anesthesia and you're disoriented and you don't know what's happening, your prey drive kicks in. And that's exactly what she did, is she killed that puppy instantly. So be really careful. These girls, they don't know what the heck's going on. Once they turn into Mother of the Year, they're awesome, but it can take 72 hours. So
talking about these first 72 hours that are so critical, and no, you're not going to get to go to the bathroom or bathe or eat or any of those things because of some of this stuff.
Well, sometimes if it's not safe to do anything else, put the bitch in a crate, leave the puppies in the whelping box. Yes, at some point you do have to do some bodily functions, but be careful.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew, check it. The results are in, and 96 of the 100 top all-breed show dogs in 2023 are fed ProPlan. The high-performance food is made with 30% protein and 20% fat to fuel the metabolic needs of an active, keenly motivated show dog while maintaining lean muscle. The owners and handlers of these top champions choose to feed ProPlan because it delivers concentrated nutrition to optimize oxygen metabolism for increased endurance, a pivotal part of campaigning a show dog. ProPlan promotes nutrition for joint health and mobility and for healthy skin and coat. The ease of feeding one of the ProPlan All Life Stages formulas that provide complete and balanced nutrition for puppies to senior dogs is an added bonus. Try ProPlan and see why more owners and handlers of top show dogs choose it. Visit purina.com/ProPlan/dogs to learn more about the number one dog food of show dog owners and handlers in 2023. All right, guys, whether you're a first-time breeder or a seasoned veteran, it's not just a litter, it's your legacy. Each puppy represents your hard work, your dedication, and it shows your commitment to the next generation. Revival is honored to support you every step of the way. You can find everything you need to support your litters and the health of your dams and sires with Breeders' Edge, Revival's premium line of reproductive and neonatal health products. Breeder's Edge was actually developed with the help of our very own Dr. Marty Greer, Revival's Director of Veterinary Services, and a leading expert in canine reproduction and neonatal care. Breeders also rely on Revival, the pet vaccine experts, for vaccine selection and safe shipping to give their litters the protection they need. Revival's online pharmacy serves breeders with a wide variety of prescription medications, plus a knowledgeable staff that's always ready to answer any questions. Grow your own healthy legacy with help from Revival Animal Health. And check this out, one time only, $15 off your order of $99 or more by using the code PODCAST15. You can use this code by calling 800-786-4751 or stopping by www.revivalanimal.com. Okay, basic concept of failure to thrive, canine herpes virus. We have talked about in many other episodes that we will link, but that can be a cause for it. Some of the other things that we can see in those first 72 hours. Talk to us about what we would see if we had a liver shunt puppy.
Yeah, usually liver shunts don't show up until the puppies are at weaning age or older.
That's what it is.
I've only seen one puppy that showed up really young, and he ended up with a yellow jaundiced belly when he was under 2 weeks old. That's very unusual. Most of the time they show up at weaning or later. We were at dinner last night with some friends who had a dog that it didn't show up until the dog was 4 years old and already in service with this family. So both the breeder and the family that took this dog as the service dog were at dinner with us last night. So that was some firsthand experience. And he ended up with a liver shunt that was 7 centimeters in diameter. Yeah, it was the biggest liver shunt that the university in Michigan had seen. So he was already a service dog, already fully functional, looked like he was completely normal until he developed ascites. So they can bite you at any point. But generally, it's when the puppies start eating protein in their food and they start to have problems. And symptoms are usually a puppy that gets lost in the corner, seems dull, is worse after they have a meal. Frequently, they'll have seizures, and those are pretty difficult. Some dogs have intrahepatic shunts, which mean the shunt is inside the liver, and that's pretty difficult to correct surgically. Extrahepatic shunts, which are mostly in the smaller breed dogs, the intrahepatic are usually larger breed dogs. The extrahepatic shunts can be fixed in some cases. In this particular case, I think they put in a coil. There are some different techniques that can be used. They can tie off the shunt. They can put a coil into the shunt and help it to be occluded. It's a pretty dicey and expensive treatment. And some dogs probably haven't and lived their whole lives, and they were just really nice, sort of easygoing little dogs that we didn't realize that they had a shunt, and they weren't very smart, but we thought they were just nice puppies. So it happens. Yeah. And as long as they're not symptomatic, I mean, some dogs come in when they're 8 years old and they have these green stones, they're biliary, and with these green bladder stones, and you're like, what the heck? And then you realize that this dog has had a shunt their whole life. So they don't always have to be a disaster, but they can be devastating. They can be easy to live with. It just depends on the size of the shunt and the dog.
Yeah. Having lived that one too. Okay. So what else are we going to see in our first 72 hours that's going to scare the bejesus out of us?
Failure to nurse, puppies that just don't latch. That's pretty frustrating for owners.
If you haven't checked for cleft palates.
This is where you check. And my staff is trained at C-section that as they're walking out of the surgery room with the puppy in their towel, that they are already checking for a cleft as they're using their Dealey and their bulb syringe. So we immediately are intervening on those. But some of these clefts are small. They're at the back of the soft palate, not in the hard palate, so they can be harder to see without an otoscope or a flashlight to really look. If there's milk coming out of the nose, that may reflect that there's a cleft palate, but it might just be that you have a fat puppy that's nursing too fast and the bitch is lactating really well. And, you know, Frenchies, they have that short little face. There's not any place for the milk to go, and it just kind of comes out of the nostrils. So always check for a cleft. Don't be surprised if it's there. Decide in advance what you would do if you had a cleft palate puppy, because in the heat of the moment, these are difficult decisions. Do you want to euthanize? Do you want to graze this puppy by feeding it with a cleft palate nipple or by tube feeding it and then taking it to surgery multiple times in some cases to get an acrylic plate put across the top of the mouth and spend thousands and thousands of dollars? There are organizations that will take these puppies and raise them if you live close to one. But most people euthanize because most cleft palate puppies have an additional defect or defects. So oftentimes clefts travel with other defects. They're oftentimes not a solitary problem. So think about what you want to do, how much you would spend if you have a cleft palate puppy, particularly if you have a breed that's a brachycephalic or a breed of dog that tends to have a higher incidence of clefts. Just plan ahead so that at 2 o'clock in the morning, you have a strategy in mind instead of falling apart and spending money on something that you later regret, or euthanizing a puppy that later you regret. I don't want anybody to make a bad decision when they're sleep deprived and not fully informed on what their choices are.
And I think, you know, avoiding clefts. I mean, we've talked about this in a whole bunch of other episodes, but make sure that your bitch is getting folic acid. Make sure that you're doing the things that you can do to help prevent some of those midline defects, right?
Avoid excessive amounts of vitamin A in the diet. Make sure they have enough folic acid, which is easy to do. It's a water-soluble vitamin. It's in a lot of the puppy foods. I know HT42D, the Royal Canin Pregnancy Diet, has additional amounts in it. There's only one published dose on it, and that's 5 milligrams per dog per day. Most capsules are 400 micrograms, so that's 12 capsules a day. That's pretty tough to do. it's probably excessive amounts, but you're not going to hurt them by additional folic acid. It just goes out in the urine if you give too much. But yes, don't feed excess vitamin A. Make sure they're on an appropriate diet for a pregnant dog and give your folic acid. It never hurts to give folic acid, and it should be started 6 weeks before the pregnancy starts. So when she comes into heat, yeah, don't be waiting around, you know, till she's ultrasounded and you see she's pregnant, because by then the damage is already typically done. So that's our thing on that. Other things that we see, typically it's just a puppy that just isn't nursing, isn't thriving, isn't gaining. We recommend that you check urine color twice a day, body temperature twice a day, and body weight twice a day to make sure that they're gaining. And if any of those parameters aren't going the way that they should be, then of course we want to jump in and intervene. And I have a list of interventions for things that we can have you do even without a diagnosis, while you're waiting to get a vet appointment, while the vet is trying to get the diagnostics done. There's a lot of things that you can be doing instead of just wringing your hands and saying, oh no, because it can take a while to get an appointment. It can take a while to get the results back. So we've talked about fluids and electrolytes. Those are super important. Plasma, I cannot overemphasize the importance of plasma. Glucose, if you do a glucose level on the puppy, you can do this at home with a glucometer and a foot stick. You can check their blood glucose levels. If you have sick puppies, I use antibiotics. I don't use antibiotics on every puppy because that's a terrible idea. And if you do an antibiotic, then you also want to give a probiotic. But antibiotics can be really helpful. I typically reach for either amoxicillin or Clavamox. And although the label says twice a day and almost everything else that's published is twice a day, I do it three times a day. Puppies have a higher percentage of their body that's water rather than fat, and Clavamox and amoxicillin are water-soluble antibiotics, so they will get urinated out of the body quicker than they will in an adult dog. So three times a day dosage is absolutely fine. Then if you have a puppy that's bleeding from any orifice, and it doesn't matter where, urine, stool, nose, mouth, whatever, umbilical cord, dew claw removal, tail dock, any of those things, vitamin K injectable can be given. If you have diarrhea in the puppies, I use kale and pectin, but not human kaopectin. I use the veterinary one. And of course, oxygen. You can never have too much oxygen. You are not going to hurt a puppy with oxygen. So have your oxygen concentrator ready to go. I prefer that over an oxygen tank because oxygen tanks can run out. And at 2 a.m, the welding shop isn't going to refill it. But if you have an oxygen concentrator and electricity that takes room air, which is 20% oxygen, turns it into 95% oxygen, and in a sealed container, a deli tray, shoebox, an incubator, anything that you can put the puppy in that you can give some additional oxygen to, that always helps these guys. And if we have puppies, like I said at the beginning, that are uncontrollably sobbing, just screaming and moving around the box, and you can't do anything with them, you've tempted them, you've potted them, you've fed them, you've done all the stuff that you know how to do, and it's still crying, I have used butorphanol, which is an injectable control drug. It's not something you're going to have at home. But if you're at your vet clinic and you're like, do something because the bitch goes crazy, she won't lay down, take care of the other puppies, you're going crazy because you can't do anything with this puppy, if you're just at loss for what to do, I have given injectable butorphanol to my own puppies and other people's as well. They quiet, they settle down, and many times they'll wake back up and just start to nurse like nothing ever happened. It's kind of a cool trick. It's not something that you're frequently going to need to do, but if you're in that situation, and you and I know that we get messages from people that listen to the podcast, and they're like, I didn't know what else to do, and so I listened to this, and it fixed it. Thank you, thank you. Just put this in your back pocket for if something ever goes wrong, and this puppy is really upset, you can do that. Or if the puppy has something terrible happen to it, some kind of trauma. I use butorphanol, I use injectable Alfaxan. I've sewn up abdominal walls with things sticking out with some of those drugs. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do for these little guys. So we just have to have a list of the things that we have for resources. We know what we can do diagnostically. We know what we can do treatment-wise. And then once we have a specific diagnosis, we can go into a more specific treatment. But if you have a treatment plan in mind, if you have a plan in mind for diagnostics and treatment, you're not going to be floundering with what you're supposed to do. And a lot of vets, like I said at the beginning, just throw up their arms. They don't know what to do. And you just look at them and go, it's a little dog. Just treat it. What would you do if this dog weighed 10 pounds? Do the same thing. It's just a small dog. Yes, there's a few differences. They dehydrate easier. They don't have the resources in their liver for gluten. Yeah, there's differences. There's nuances to it. But if it's just a little dog, so treat it like you would if it were my big dog. If it were a 10-pound dog that walked through your door, what would you do diagnostically? What would you do therapeutically? Let's do that. And you know what? Many times it works.
Yeah, 100%. So I just wanted to circle back to one thing, and that is the plasma. Do you recommend buying ahead from Gene Dodds? Do you recommend having your clinic spin you some down from your own bitch? How do you recommend plasma?
I prefer to buy it commercially. We know that those dogs are health screened. We know that they're typically hyperimmunized so that they have a lot of antibodies. We don't know exactly what they have titers to, and it may not be the exact same thing you have in your kennel. So that's the advantage of having it from your own kennel, is whatever happens in your household is protected against. But anytime you handle the plasma, you have to draw blood from the dog, preferably a large male dog from your kennel, not the pregnant dog, not the mother dog, because she's already anemic. So please don't take a gallon of blood from her and cause her to be more anemic than she already is. It's really a challenge to spin the blood and get every red blood cell out of it, because if you give red blood cells accidentally, then that will hypersensitize the dog to a future time if they do end up needing plasma or a blood transfusion. So you could run into some risks with that. And your vet has to handle it, and you have to be really careful that it doesn't sit on the counter too long and get warm. And bacteria loves to grow in plasma, so you have to be very, very careful that you keep it frozen and use it as soon as it's thawed and you're throwing it appropriately. So I prefer buying it commercially. I don't want to mess around with, and you have to draw three times the amount of blood that you need plasma, because that's how much waste there is with red blood cells and the waste, the other things that happen. So if you want 100 cc's of plasma, you have to draw 300 cc's of blood. And for a large breed dog, that's a lot. When they draw your blood for a unit of blood, it's about 450 to 500 cc's. So it's a pretty large toll to take on a dog. So Gene Dodds has a kennel full of greyhounds that are hyperimmunized that they use for donors. And of course, greyhounds have higher red blood cell counts, so they can use their blood, that red blood cell part, for blood transfusions for dogs that need those. And there's also Animal Blood Resources in Michigan. There's a few other labs that do have these resources. They have to be shipped frozen. I think you should have a bag in your freezer if you're going to have a litter of puppies. Yeah. And it's good for 5 years in the freezer. It's a little expensive, but it's under $100 a puppy, depending on how it's administered, who gives it, how you buy it, all those things. It's under $100 a puppy. And I don't know too many people that wouldn't save a $3,000 puppy by spending $100 or less.
I personally experienced it saving a litter. I mean, seriously. Yeah. And go through, because I can't do it off the top of my head. You can give the plasma subcutaneously up to... Remind me.
Orally for the first 12 hours and anytime subcutaneously. Orally, once the puppy's more than 12 hours old, then the intestinal tract changes the size of the molecules it will let through. Antibodies are very large molecules. So after they're 12 hours, maybe 24 hours old, depending on when they started nursing and some other dynamics that we don't fully have a way to test, those puppies can no longer absorb those antibodies. So they will digest them as proteins. Now, on rare occasion, I will give plasma to an older puppy if they've got really horrible diarrhea, looking for a local antibody effect, hoping that we can manage some of that. There are studies in cattle that tell us that. And again, we go back to cows, not because I do a lot of cow work, but because we know that we have research on cattle that we don't have on small animals. So it works really well to give it orally in the first 12 hours. You give it subcutaneously at any age. And of course, they can give it intravenously as well. So, you know, if you have a puppy that's 6 weeks old and sick and they can place an IV catheter, great. It's pretty hard to place IV catheters in really young newborn puppies. They're just so tiny that it can be hard. And it depends a little on the breed. A Yorkie that's 2 ounces is going to have a much smaller chance than, oh, the boxer that was 18 ounces that was born yesterday. But still, those are pretty small. So sub-Q is usually the way it's given. Again, you want to warm it very carefully so that you don't overheat it. We usually put it down our shirts, someplace that we don't overheat it.
In the bra, yeah. Usually.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though your husband may think you're really hot, you're not so hot that you're going to hurt the plasma. So just warm it up in your shirt in a bowl of water that has a thermometer in it. Any of those things are fine. When we're doing bags of plasma at our practice, we put them in a bowl of water. When we're doing tubes, we put them down our shirts. And then you can administer it. But do not microwave the plasma, because you'll damage the antibodies and it basically won't do you any good. To give it, it'll just be a very expensive denatured protein product that can cause a problem. So I just buy it, have it in advance. Most emergency clinics have it in their freezer, but they won't sell it to you because they don't have a relationship with you. You can't call them and beg them for it. And they oftentimes only have enough for their own patients anyway, so they wouldn't be able to spare if you're not a patient of theirs. And the dose is 16 cc's per puppy, regardless of the size.
Perfect.
It doesn't matter if you're a 2 ounce puppy or an 18 ounce puppy, you get 16 cc's. If you're a little tiny puppy, you have to give it in smaller aliquots over the course of that 12 to 24 hour period. Stomach capacity on a puppy is essentially 1 cc per 1 ounce of body weight. So a 4 ounce puppy could take 4 cc's of plasma orally. And then we have clients that want this given routinely at their C-sections because they've had such healthy puppies with it. We have other people that we only administer to their puppies if their puppies are sick. But if they choose to take some home with them, great. They can finish up the dosing at home. If they want it all given at the practice, we'll give, for instance, to a 4-ounce puppy, 4 cc's with a feeding tube and then the other 12 cc's sub-Q. And merrily they go on their way. And anytime you give sub-Q fluids or electrolytes, plasma, any of those things, a little bit will leak back out at the site of the needle puncture. So as soon as you pull the needle out, be prepared to pinch the skin, hold it for about 30 seconds, and that will diminish the amount of backflow that you get. The more pressure you put on, the bigger the bubble, the more likely you're having a little bit of leak, whether it's plasma or fluids. But that's typically to be expected, and you might lose a couple of drops, but you're not going to lose 12 cc's.
Perfect. Okay, 72 hours, 3 days in on episode 3 of Neonates.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. We crammed a lot into today, Marty. Thank you so much. And we look forward to talking to you next month on episode 4 of Neonates.
More to come.
All right, crew. I hear from folks pretty much daily asking for a specific topic or for a series of podcasts on a topic. So ask and you shall receive. I've done all the hard work. I've sorted, searched, and compiled 8 different albums from the archives on our most popular topics. And when I say there's a podcast for that, I ain't just a woofin'. Getting yours today is super simple. Just jump on puredogtalk.com/store and click the PDT albums image. And when you're in there, you're going to find a collection of veterinary voices. You're going to find a collection for breeding and whelping hands-on. You'll find Pure Dog Talk University on dog breeding. Love the breeds. Up your game. Owner handlers, the interviews, events and sports. There is so much there. And once you're in those links, you'll be able to read the details of the topic. For a special introductory price of $1.99, you get a link to dozens, up to more than 100 episodes on these specific topics. And while you're there, if you or a friend or family member are just getting started, even just starting a search for your first well-bred, purebred dog, you can also check out Auntie Laura's Beginner's Guide to Show Dogs at puredogtalk.com/book to get the foundational Pure Dog Talk episodes with bonus tracks. So hop on it, y'all. These special prices will not last. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.